WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now, Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. I'm AJ Myers. Happy to join by Griffin Bloomstein and Josh Rodford. The three of us are back together, getting you recapping Syracuse basketball, Syracuse women's basketball, and men's basketball, and then diving into this football transfer portal for Fran Brown's group. It all kind of happens really fast. It opens, and then everyone floods out, and then a bunch of names start flooding in as well. And then, believe it or not, it's January. Yes, it's January 9th, but it is soon to be February, and that means lacrosse season is starting. I know that's hard to believe, especially for people that are in Syracuse. I haven't been there since last year, because it was, you know, New Year. That got Griffin to laugh. It is going to a lot of snow, apparently. I'm looking forward to going back, but not for the weather standpoint. But Griffin, speaking of the New Year, I was not here for the last episode when Syracuse lost the opener of ACC play. So a happy New Year to you guys. But is it too late to be saying Happy New Year? I've gotten in this kind of debate of when it's time to just get into the new year and it isn't so happy anymore.
I feel like it's when in the first like half of January, it's whenever you see someone for the first time.
I agree. I
feel like that's my kind of rule that I live by. It's first half of January, first time you're seeing someone since, if it's the first time you're seeing someone since the new year and you're still in like the first half of January, I feel like it's very acceptable. Into the later portions of January, that's when it kind of gets murky, and you know, I think it's a little overdue. But as long as only it gotta be the first time you see someone,
yes,
and it gotta be that first half of January, maybe like first 2 weeks.
I like that.
No, you have 3 days to do that.
Three?
Wow. If you're giving him 14, 15 days to do this, that's like wishing someone Merry Christmas on January 4th. Like, you don't do that. You know, you have three days to wish someone a happy new year. And then after that bit dies. You know, it's the new year is already set in. We're not going back in time.
But I feel like Christmas is one day. Then it's a new year. Like it's the new year. It's 365 days.
The first day of the new year is also one day.
But it's not like you're not saying happy holiday. You're saying happy new year. It's the new year. It's 2026. It's an entity, not a single day.
Yeah. Because technically, it should be a happy new year the whole year. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I hope everyone has a happy new year the whole year, not just the first day of the year.
I think I might have just gotten Josh.
I think so. I think we got him in a corner. I like
no,
that.
No, I saw this. I saw an argument about this on X the other day. I think you have 3 days to do it. And then if it's anything after that, it's just stupid. Like, it just defeats the whole point. Like, you're going on February and you're still wishing people happy new year. I mean, Griff, come on.
I never said February. I said first
you said 2 weeks at the end of the second week of January. You're almost closer to February than you are at the start.
I like
of the
rule
year.
Of thumb: first time you're seeing somebody in the new year, give them that.
Sure, sure.
Like you guys, first time I'm seeing you guys, and I give you the happy.
This
new
is respectable.
I reject your happy new year. Ah. You should have said it on the first 3 days.
So like what you're telling me when you get back to Syracuse, maybe you run into a professor that you haven't seen. Hey, happy New Year. No?
There's going to be no Happy New Year.
Oh, come on. All right. Well,
ideological differences, maybe.
Yes. Our differences have been shown here on the pod. There was a difference for Sarah. I always love to do the transition like that.
Yes, that.
There was a difference for Syracuse men's basketball in their second conference game. It was, but I didn't realize this until it was pointed out to me. First true road game, and it was the latest one for any team in the whole country, which was kind of crazy. And they handled it. It wasn't comfortable. They beat Georgia Tech 82-72. This was on Tuesday night. We're recording this one Friday afternoon, so a little bit after that defeat. And I've had a chance to really let things soak in after that Clemson game, which it was a game you felt they had. I know you guys discussed it, and they just couldn't really get over the line. This was a first half from Adrian Autry's group that I was really impressed by. I thought the offense finally looked like an offense. It looked like there was good ball movement. There was some game plan going on. But then holy smokes, in the second half, I mean, it was same old Syracuse, same old Adrian Autry Syracuse, where couldn't put a team away. It was just like they were playing, a quad four game, a lower team, in Niagara, whoever you want to throw out there, Youngstown State, where they just could not put Georgia Tech away, a lesser Yellow Jacks group away. And thank goodness for Donnie Freeman. I know we criticized him, when he was out, when he was injured, because, I think it was valid criticism because he hadn't really lived up to standards yet. But in his first two games back, you can't criticize him at all. He has been outstanding. 27 points against Georgia Tech. If this is what the team's going to be, just let Donnie Freeman go to work. Let his athleticism win you games. Yeah, that's what's got to do. That's what's got to do. And that's kind of what had to happen, especially in that second half. It was just, you're going to hope Donnie Freeman can make something happen with his freak athleticism. I don't think he shot the ball great the whole game, but you can't argue with everything he did. He almost had a double-double and three blocks and a steal. That's pretty darn good, Griffin.
Yeah, Donnie was the truth, and we told Donnie that to make us eat our words, and he has certainly done that. I want to say something, because I texted some friends watching that first half, and I was like, wow. Like, Syracuse is running an offense. Like, they're going off-ball screens. They have motions. It looked like they had sets. And the first 10 minutes of the second half was relatively the same. I would say Syracuse played well in the first 6 to 8 minutes of that second half. They got up to, like, a 22-point lead. They had every single big man on Georgia Tech in foul trouble. And then they just stopped attacking. The offense stopped flowing. It almost seemed like they were too comfortable, and I'm gonna make an obscure reference that probably won't align with you guys, but this it screams like 2019 to 2022 Boston Celtics, where you have a lead in the second half and in the end of the fourth quarter, and you forget how to run an offense. You start wasting time in the shot clock. Syracuse would get over half court with about 22 seconds left in the shot clock, and then kind of just sit out at the perimeter for another 10 seconds. And then there would be 10 seconds, maybe 8 seconds on the shot clock, and the ball would be in J.J. Starling or Nate George's hands, and Syracuse would have no idea what to do. They would just attack the rim and throw up a bad shot. Or even sometimes you had William Kyle outside the perimeter catching the ball where they try to run around him and do like a little dribble handoff. It just wasn't working. Syracuse's offense went stalled out. And it seemed for a second that Syracuse could lose this game. And Donnie bailed them out a couple times. The defense kind of helped them out. Shout out Nate George at the free throw line. But this should have been a 25 to 30 point win, because Syracuse had all the momentum. They were up 20 points. They had Dongo with four fouls. They had their whole starting lineup had four fouls to end this game, and nobody fouled out. Dongo went to the bench with an injury. He came back. Like, there was just too many different things for Syracuse not to win this game by 30 points, and it was a little disappointing there.
Griff, I think you got to give this team a little more credit. I mean, I guess you can look at it as the fact that they have a one-player offense right now, and the fact that Donnie Freeman is the only viable scorer you can rely on in these games. But I mean, they went on the road, the first road test of the year, and they led by 20 in the second half. And I know they didn't finish the game great, but you got to look at the fact that this was a Georgia Tech team that went to play at Cameron Indoor last week and almost beat Duke. I mean, they only lost to Duke by 6 points. It's not like it's a sloppy Georgia Tech team by any means. I mean, they're not a great team at all, but I just to throw away this double-digit win on the road, I mean, you can bash Adrian Autry all you want for these close wins and these bad losses to Hofstra and whatnot, but I just think this is a game where he got it done. Like, he got the win on the road. He did what he needed to do to win. I don't think there's anything else that needs to be said. Yeah, they played sloppy down the final 5 to 10 minutes of the game, and I don't think they almost gave the game away. I mean, Georgia Tech inched back into it, but I didn't think there was ever a point where I thought Georgia Tech was going to win. And I mean, they nailed their free throws like they haven't done all season. Shout out the New Year's resolutions that we made for that. And, you know, I just thought that they got themselves a big enough cushion that they could be sloppy there at the end of the game, and they still earned the win. I don't think there's anything else that needs to be said.
I just think it's just too much of a theme. You for 3 years now with Adrian Autry, there has not been a blowout. Really, you know, especially in conference play, every game just seemingly gets close, and his teams don't really know how to execute down the stretch. And I think a part of that is because, and, you know, get the burner on. Here's maybe, I don't know how hot of a take it is, but I think it's time to put J.J. Starling, maybe you start him at the start of the game, but I think you put him to the bench. I've seen enough from him in non-conference play, especially in these competitive non-conference games in Las Vegas to now. I think Kai and Anthony's deserve the spot to start and to be in the game closing down the stretch. You shoot 4 of 9, you get 11 points. Then you look at J.J. Starling, he goes 2 of 10. His inability to consistently knock down a simple jump shot has just been too frequent for me this season and really for me his entire Syracuse tenure. I know that's probably not going to happen because Starling is a captain. He's a veteran. I think everyone respects him on that team and in that locker room. But his performances just aren't matching that, you know, those things. Yes, you can be the leader, you can be the captain, you can be all the veteran things you want to be, but you still have to match performance-wise. And there's a freshman in Kai and Anthony that is simply outperforming him offensively. And I wouldn't say J.J. Starling was offering a whole hell of a lot defensively either at the moment. And I think especially late in that game, in that second half, J.J. Starling would either, you know, I'm not sure how many turnovers he ended up with. He ended up with 2. He would either turn it over or just kind of not do anything with the ball. And I think you can really run an offense through Johnny Freeman and then having Kai and Anthony out there as your, you know, true point guard or whatnot, or not true point guard, as true shooting guard, is a viable option for Adrian Autry and something that it will determine, you know, how much of a coach he is. Can he make that tough call? Because I think it's time.
I think it's an interesting point you make there. I thought that Kyan played a really good first half. Second half, it kind of seemed like when he was on the floor, he wasn't getting the ball at all. He had one shot in the second half.
And, after and that goes such with the whole good lack of offense. You know what I mean? It's just like things get so stagnant offensively.
Yeah, and that's true. Like, you can't have a guy that scores 11 points. That first three he had from the right wing is just a catch and shoot, drilled it. He had another three that just looked cash. Like, he had so many good shots in that first half. He was creating for himself. He didn't seem lost. And then for him just to not be involved in the offense in the second half was a little disappointing. I think another thing, Syracuse, I'm going to try to see if there's other first possession of the game. Yes, their first possession of the game was a alley-oop to William Kyle. Worked perfectly. And it kind of set the tone for Syracuse. Okay, they know what they're going to do. They have a little plan to start. And it's been for the past couple of games that William Kyle has not been involved as much, whether that's on the offense, defensively. And it's not scaring me because of how good that we've seen him be. But for someone like William Kyle, who can be a double-double threat, he had 5 points. Like, his first basket was Syracuse's first basket, an alley-oop dunk. Why don't they go to that more often? It's almost a guaranteed bucket, an alley-oop dunk with William Kyle. So that was one thing that kind of stood out to me. Another thing, even though Nate Kings went 1 for 4 from 3,
I was gonna
his
get to
presence defensively was really, really good. He had a couple of pin down blocks in the first half that I thought was spectacular. His effort on the perimeter was also really good. Second half, he wasn't as great defensively. Offensively, they tried to run a couple of sets just for him, ISO situations, which he turned the ball over, which I was a little unhappy of. Going to ISO ball with under 10 minutes left in the game when you need to try to stop a Georgia Tech run, it's maybe not the best thing, but that's not on him, obviously. Good shout out to him. I want to see more of Sadiq White also. Like, he only played 1 minute in the second half. I thought in the first half he didn't look awful. He had a couple of possessions where he was involved. But that's the thing. Like, if Syracuse right now has Donnie back, Donnie played 34 minutes. Nate King's played 37 minutes, which is kind of crazy. Those are like Boeheim style minutes where you're not taking a guy out. And then Ibrahim Suwore,
Oh
we're not
boy,
going to talk
here we
about
go.
my not guy, but
Not
he played
guy.
8 minutes and had he played 8 minutes and had five fouls, and it seemed like he was on the court way longer than 8 minutes. Anytime watching, it seemed like Ibrahim Suwore was on the court, and for he had the same amount of minutes as Sadiq White. Sadiq White's better than him. They're not even that much different in size, so why not play Sadiq White? If you can play Donnie at the five, there's no reason why Donnie and Will Kyle should be out of the game at the same time. So why not put Sadiq White in with Donnie, or put Sadiq White in with William Kyle and play that four? Like, Donnie as a five is not awful. Like, especially if you have a guy like Sadiq White who can be in the paint and block shots and protect the rim. So
Donnie
that's what I
Freeman
was a
is,
little mad about.
Donnie Freeman is athletic enough to play every position.
Yeah, I mean, he can bring up the ball, and he did bring up the ball a couple of times. And his defense was fine. There's a couple times where he got lost, but overall, he can guard a two through five, which is good, and that's the versatility that you want. Well, one more point before I let Josh have his time. JJ is in there for defense. I thought JJ's defense as well. That's why I wouldn't have him out to close games. I still think he has the potential to score on his own, which can help in late games, which I'd rather not have them do the ISO ball, but all right, that's the end of my rant.
Okay, well, Griffin, Syracuse has played two games since your Akir Suwore rant. What has he done in both games?
Scored points.
He, well, not only scored points, but he has gotten fouled and made a bucket and had a chance at an and one in both games. He didn't make the free throw this time, but since you've gone at him, he's now shown you up twice by finishing through contact for two whole points.
So you're saying that showing me up is getting one basket. I mean, clap it up, because that guy, I mean,
Well, you
before.
said he shouldn't deserve minutes, but I'm seeing here he's got 5 points in his last two games. That's 2.5 more points than you're averaging this season.
How many fouls did he have against Clemson? How
Against
many fouls?
Clemson?
Yeah.
He had zero against Clemson.
Okay, so he has 5 points and five fouls in two games.
That's solid.
Congrats.
And five rebounds as well. And this guy's consistent.
Consistently on the bench is where he should be for
Anyways,
Sadiq White.
I liked where you were getting with the whole Sadiq White thing. I was a little surprised too. I thought, obviously, over the last couple games before Donnie came back, it was Sadiq White in the starting lineup. So I think this is really an interesting situation that it's his minutes that are getting carved out of the rotation and not Akir Suwore. Now, was it because they were playing against Georgia Tech? I don't know. But it is weird that Sadiq White is getting minutes taken away from him. I do think I really agree with the fact that him and Donnie can both be out there at the same time. I don't think this needs to be an exclusive relationship where Donnie is the four and Sadiq is his backup, and any minutes that Donnie's not out there, Sadiq is. I don't know why we're limiting Sadiq White here, because he was starting to really show signs of improvement there when he had a run in the starting lineup and whatnot. One more thing, Pittsburgh and Syracuse are playing tomorrow, and Pittsburgh and Syracuse, one common thing this year, they both lost to Hofstra, and it's just a great thing, isn't it, Griffin?
Shout out Hofstra.
If Pittsburgh really struggles to defend guards, Cruz Davis absolutely torched them for 34 in that Hofstra game. I don't want to quit on JJ yet. I'm going to give him one more chance. I think he was as bad as he's been the last two games. I don't think he can get much lower, and I think this is a prime matchup for him. This is a Pittsburgh team that is very vulnerable to guards. JJ will get 8 to 12 shots once again, and I think this is the game where he has to turn it around, and I think he will. I think this is a good enough opportunity for him to do it. And, you know, he's played Pittsburgh several times. He's been in the ACC his entire career. So there's no reason why he wouldn't be familiar with what this team is going to bring. And I think, you know, Donnie being where he is right now, that lets JJ finally slide into that second scoring option. And he really needs to show it this week. Otherwise, yeah, I'm with you, Griff. I'm going to be out on him if he can't find a way to string together some good performances over the next few games.
Yeah, for me, he just simply has to start delivering. It's just been too long this year. I know last season he dealt with an injury, but this season, as far as I know, he's been pretty healthy. And he has to do more. And quite frankly, he just simply hasn't. And as Josh alluded to, Syracuse takes on Pittsburgh next. That is on Saturday, tomorrow, if you're listening to this on a Friday, at 2 p.m. is away. It's in Pittsburgh, but this is not a Pittsburgh teams of the past. They are having a poor season. They are 112th in the net. And you glimpse at that Syracuse schedule, these are three games, the next three games, Griffin, they got to be three wins. If you slip up in any of these three, I know two are on the road, it's another massive dent in the resume. And again, you sneak out a win against Georgia Tech, and it's only a quad three win on the road. So, you know, you exert a lot of energy for not that important or impressive. It's an important win, but not that impressive of a win. And this is quad two tomorrow. You got to handle business. I mean, as I said, Pitt is not that good. They are not the Pitt teams of the past. They're 0-3 in quad one. Their best win is against Ohio State, who they beat by one earlier in the season at home. But these next three games, Pitt, Florida State, Boston College, they need to be wins for Adrian Autry.
Yeah, no other way to say it. Have to be wins. You beat this Pittsburgh team, you maybe move up. Hofstra, they beat Towson, so they could end up being a quad two loss instead of a quad three loss. That would be pretty big. That would bump Syracuse up in the net rankings just for Hofstra winning. So
that's what I was going to say. When Hofstra beat Towson last night, Syracuse jumped like seven spots in the net just for Hofstra winning that game. So obviously you're going to want to cheer for Hofstra and Clemson and all these other guys the rest of the season.
Yeah. If you're a Syracuse fan, you're rooting for Hofstra the rest of the season, as much as that's crazy to say. Another thing that I think will be key for Syracuse, Josh and I mentioned this last week, was assists.
Oh, yeah.
The last couple games where Syracuse hasn't played too well, they've not been passing the ball. It's all about those sets, all about passing. You know, some guy assists, or you might not realize how big of a stat they are. But in that first half against Georgia Tech, Syracuse had 10 assists. They were up by 14 at the half. Second half, you lose by 4, Syracuse only had 5 assists. Syracuse, like that number, what did we say that number, Josh, was like 12?
We want it above 12.
All right, 12 assists per game. That's usually probably going to be a good thing. Now, a 15 assist night should be the goal. Like, that should be the standard. Syracuse just had 10 in the first half. If they could get upwards of 18, maybe 20 assists, that's how you can tell that this offense is really hitting its potential, because it should be Nate George driving, kicking to the corner, kings of three. Like, that should be the thing that's happening. It should be the lobs to William Kyle, which are assists. It should be entry feeds to Donnie in the post, one dribble, fadeaway. Like, those, the passes to Betsy in the corner, those should be assists, and those should be the buckets that every time Syracuse is going for.
The feeds to Suarez in the paint for the and one.
Fine, sure. Though if Suarez gives me one and one a game, In 5 minutes, I will never mention his name again.
Okay. Syracuse takes on Pitt. That is at 2:00. McClure Remodeling countdown to tip off is at 1:30. A game that Syracuse simply has to have, even though it's on the road. The Syracuse Pitt rivalry isn't there as it has been. Really hasn't been since Adrian Autry, Jim Boeheim stepped away. So hopefully, maybe in the few years to come, that rivalry can get revamped, because, you know, in a a school that is always looking for a rival and has debates on what a rival is. I've kind of always said, geographically, Pitt makes the most sense. It doesn't help, though, that Pitt already has a rival. Anyways, over to Syracuse women's basketball. They laid an egg last night. They dropped to Virginia Tech at home, and is not necessarily a great Hokie side either. They fell 77-57, and talk about an offensive struggle. That is what it was for Coach Jack's group. The team, as a total, only hit 3 three-pointers, which has kind of been the theme all year. They can't really knock down threes. Sophie Burrows was 1 for 6, really struggled in 34 minutes. She had just 7 points. This team also racked up 15 turnovers in this one. It was a real off game from everybody, really, and you hope it's not more to come. I am, though, getting kind of concerned that these offensive woes are going to start costing this team more games in conference play because, again, Virginia Tech's not at the top of the ACC. There's plenty more teams that are better than them. And Syracuse was outplayed the entire half. In that second quarter, they didn't score until, I think it was under six at least. So there were some real sluggish moments throughout this game.
Yeah, I mean, and we hate to keep talking about it, but it seems like if this team shoots the ball well, and a lot of it relies on Sophie Burrows, if she shoots the ball well, it's going to be a good game, probably a win. If she doesn't, the offense not flowing as much, probably going to be a loss. Now, a lot of credit to Uche Zoje. She's been dominant down low, blocks, rebounds, points. She on all, as you know, football, it's all
five
levels,
blocks
but,
last night. Can't ask her to do much more.
No. And, you know, how much of that falls on Layla Feely and Dominique Darius to step up a little bit. If Burrows isn't shooting well, Darius didn't have a great day. She only played 18 minutes. I didn't catch an injury, so I don't know if that's something that we need to look out for, but she only plays 18 minutes. You know, she's someone that's probably playing close to 30 on any given night. Layla Filia played 35, only put up 9 shots. You know, as someone that big time transfer could be your leading scorer at the end of the season, she's probably someone you'd like to get more than 9 shots, especially if she went 2 of 2 from distance. So that's another thing to look out for. It's all going to be about how many wins this team gets in ACC play. If they can win more than 1 every 2 games, yeah, then things are looking good. It's just disappointing that teams like Duke and Virginia Tech, who were not atop the conference like they have been in the past couple of years, that you fall to them, and those are games that are winnable and can help your standing in the net rankings.
Yeah, I mean, they lost. They lost pretty badly, and all three of their losses this year have been of the blowout category, all three coming by 20 or more points. It's only their third loss, though. I mean, unlike the men's team, the women's team actually has some wiggle room here, and I think you said it right there. As long as they're not losing 1 out of every 2 games, they're going to be okay. Now, Izoje has been solid defensively all season long, the 5 blocks you mentioned last night, but she wasn't very effective on the offensive end. She missed 8 shots. She had 4 turnovers, and, you know, stuff like that hurts, especially when you have Sophie Burrows that has, you know, we've talked about it. She hasn't had, you know, a great start to the season. Syracuse won their 2 ACC games before this game, and Burrows was great. She had 14 points in one of the wins, and she had 12 in the other. So, you know, it's not like she's been invisible on this offense, but it, when you have both of those games, when you have Izoje missing 8 shots and when you have Burrows missing 10 shots, it makes it really difficult to put together a good enough performance to win the game. And, you know, obviously we saw last night it wasn't the case. But, you know, that shouldn't be the reason that this team is going to struggle going forward. I think you can have an off night and you're still going to keep going forward with the season. And I think this women's team has shown early on in the season, the big wins over Utah, over Auburn, they're capable of winning those games when those things come to fruition. So I wouldn't be worried at all of the position that this team is in. I think they've gotten a slew of scoring from numerous players so far this season, and I think they're in a great position. They rattle off 3 more wins here before they go into North Carolina, and you know they're 16-3 heading into that game. It's going to be hard if they beat that UNC team and have won 17 of 20 games to not put them in the top 25.
Certainly, I just think there is just a little worrying sign that this offense maybe has too many lapses, and you can't win a game when you only get 2 players in double figures, and bench production hasn't necessarily been a strong suit. Get more consistent shooting and get more consistent offense in general. I think it's just the one thing that's lacking, because it seems like Izoze Ojoche can, you know, seemingly carry you defensively at times the way she's been performing.
Sorry, UJ, if you're listening to this.
Yeah, that was my bad there. But it'll be interesting.
Did you call the game next week?
Yeah. Virginia is hey, it's been a minute since I've looked at the roster. Virginia is I think top 40 in the net. Yeah, 37 net ranking. So they're a step up from Virginia Tech. It will be difficult. It's also not at home. So it'll be interesting to see how Coach Jack's team performs in a game that is important in conference play as they continue to roll through their ACC schedule. And then they are back at home against Cal. But again, I think there's concerning signs offensively. Hopefully they can turn things around, because it is a good team to watch when the offense is clicking, and defensively they have had really strong performances. Switching over to the gridiron, and I mean, you could talk all day about the transfer portal and how everything's happening. Hope everyone is enjoying the college football playoffs. Ole Miss and Miami played a great game last night. Again, we were recording this Friday afternoon. Tonight, Indiana and Oregon square off. Miami's representing the ACC, and they're talking about how great the ACC is. So, you know, Syracuse can pat themselves on the back. Maybe they're in a good conference football-wise. But it is good that Miami is playing well. I think it does help the ACC in some way. But again, to the transfer portal, and let's start with the latest transfer that just come in. And this has happened, maybe 10 minutes before we started recording this on this Friday afternoon. Elijah Moore is coming back to Syracuse. Nope, not that.
Oh, that's my guy.
Not that Elijah
Moore.
Okay. This is a football Elijah Moore, freshman from Florida State. He had 3 receptions last season for 52 yards. He's a 4-star. He's got loads of talent. He's from the Maryland area. 6'4", 203. That checks boxes. I like that. And again, with a lot of these transfers, it's like, okay, you know, you're basically getting a fresh player. I mean, he's barely played. He had, again, 3 receptions last season, and then he redshirted his freshman year. So he's a redshirt sophomore next year. He only had 2 receptions his true freshman year, and they were both in blowout games. So he hasn't played much, but again, you know, 6'4", 203, that's promising. The other promising one, I got to go to the tight end spot from South Carolina, Michael Smith. Again, hasn't played a whole lot of football, but 6'6", 248, that's a unit on the field. So you like what you see there. Then there's been some players going out. My guy, Yasin Willis, is going to Kansas. Best of luck to him. Ricky Collins is going somewhere. I forget.
Kennesaw State. Don't disrespect.
That's what it is. He's gone. Best of luck to him. I think that's probably a better spot for him. Griffin, is there any big guy? I got a few guys from the MAC I know. Anyone really catching your eye in the portal?
I'll let Josh go first. Seems like he's okay. A little excited.
Okay, Griff, you're going to want to pull out a notepad for this, okay? Not actually, but just write this down, okay?
Yeah, I might have one.
Okay, so last year, Syracuse gets a quarterback from LSU.
No, I know where it's going.
He's supposed to be a program changer, okay? So this year, Syracuse gets a player from LSU who's a sophomore, who's a quarterback, who has a 100% completion percentage. Deja vu. His name is Jujuan Johnson, I believe, from LSU, and he's coming to Syracuse to play running back. He was a quarterback for LSU last year, but he told Coach Fran Brown that he is going to play running back here. Is this the Yasin Willis replacement? I mean, I hate to get a little down here, but if this is the best we're gonna do for the running back room, I mean, a guy who played quarterback last year.
Well, he played running back. He wasn't a quarterback.
He also played on defense too, I think.
He was a safety as well, I heard.
Well, all right, now he was mostly a running back last year. Yeah, he attempted one pass. You know, you got to give him a little credit. He had some catches also. But, like, he was, like, LSU's, like, 4th or 5th string running back.
Yes. Yes. You are right. I just thought it's very interesting. We go get sophomore quarterback, LSU, 100% completion percentage. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, he's also, I was checking the bio of, he was in LSU's bio on their athletics website. It says, the most productive high school quarterback in Louisiana prep history.
Like
I thought that was Ricky
14,000
Thomas.
yards.
14,000 total yards, 171 total touchdowns, also a state record. Mr. Louisiana football in 2023. And then will play cornerback in 2023 for the Tigers, which he didn't really see the field at all. But it's funny. He was listed. I saw he's listed as a safety on one recruiting website. Was listed as a cornerback. Listed as a quarterback. Now a running back. I mean, talk about a guy. He might be the new Demetrius Samuel. We don't know. Who knows?
Is that all we're doing? We're just going to recruit people that can play both sides of the ball and just hope we can plug and play the same 11 guys on both sides of the field at all times.
Hey, if Fran Brown could, Fran Brown would.
Yeah.
So that's that. The other more interesting part that I want to go back to that receiver talk for a little bit. A lot of their commitments so far have been offensive weapons. They also got Ahmad Miller, who was out of Jackson State, a running back. Their wide receivers, Cole Weaver from Miami, Ohio. He's also 6'3", 220, so that's a big receiver. Their other one was, I think, another receiver. Anyway, Michael Smith. So they're getting big guy. Fran Brown loves his big people beat up little people talk. And then you also have Kelvin Russell, who's like 6'5". So they want to go big. And you might even say these guys haven't caught too many passes, Elijah Moore. But I mean, Jackson Meeks was the same way from Georgia. I know I don't want to compare someone that was signed to the NFL, but Jackson Meeks didn't catch too many passes before coming to Syracuse. So, you can't really write these guys off. Syracuse has a couple of young receivers that are coming in. The big thing is quarterback. And we've heard news about these guys coming in for visits, and then some of them have committed elsewhere.
Yeah, they were chasing Marcus Stokes a little bit, and then he ended up committing to Memphis. He was out
Yeah,
of
I think that's a good thing.
West Florida. Yeah,
I
I
saw
know.
some things online about him. Yeah, he might not be a culture fit here.
Okay.
I think also there's some defensive holes. They got a guy from Toledo, the linebacker, another one. I think they get a defensive tackle or an edge player from Toledo. I still think there's more holes on the defensive side, especially
Yeah.
at the linebacker position, where they had trouble stopping the run. Shout out Jeremiah Love, who's probably going to be a top 10 pick. But there's other holes. And also one area, Syracuse hasn't picked up an offensive lineman. You can say what you want about that group last year, whether they improved from the year before or not. Not too many offensive linemen hit the portal for Syracuse, which is, I guess, a good thing. Joshua Miller probably being the only one. But I probably need a couple more of those guys. I would want another running back. We haven't even touched on Will Nixon. Shout out him for declaring for the draft after getting another year of eligibility. I don't know if Syracuse fans would want him back. I don't know if Syracuse fans think he has a shot of going to the NFL. I'll leave that up to them. I don't want to attack Will Nixon too hard. Good guy, good guy. But interesting couple of things of Syracuse transfers going out. You mentioned Yasin Willis going to Kansas. That's a kind of a weird one where Kansas is not a football team and yada yada yada. Caleb Singleton, he was a corner that Fran Brown brought in one of his first recruiting classes going to Mississippi State. I was kind of under the radar, like guy who didn't play a whole lot for the Orange last year, getting some SEC action. Glad Ricky Collins found a home where he can potentially figure it out. But a lot of these other Syracuse guys, Darryl Gill, who's top 20 on some sites for recruiting, in the transfer portal, hasn't committed anywhere, but's been linked to a couple power conference schools. It'll be interesting to see where those guys go. But Syracuse lost 26 guys and have only brought in 7. Now, I know you bring in a freshman class, but you lose a lot of seniors. I think there's going to be some more additions, maybe some late shot clock buzzer beater type guys where you bring in a couple guys and you don't want some players to transfer out because they're adding more at their position. Some rumblings about that. But it'll be exciting. I'm a big transfer portal recruiting guy, so I've been following it closely, and it's been fun.
Yeah, I heard the window closing obviously next week. Trinidad Chambliss in the name in Syracuse talks. You know, I
Dylan
think
Raiola.
Fran Brown's waiting for
waiting
the
for the
college
Dylan
football
Raiola.
playoff to be over, and they're just gonna grab the entire Ole Miss, Oregon, Indiana second team and just bring them here.
Well, there has been some like meme accounts for Syracuse. We don't we follow Syracuse Twitter.
Raiola's stuff is hysterical.
some meme accounts trying to get Raiola to come here, and that's been funny to follow. Shout out those guys, but unfortunately, I think Fran can only handle one quarterback that suffered a season-ending injury last season. But I think the big one will be quarterback, and we'll obviously talk next week if Syracuse gets a guy. We'll talk regardless, but if Syracuse gets a guy, we'll go into a deep dive on him, and you know how he expects that whole thing to go.
Yeah, that is definitely. I mean, you mentioned the defensive issues that need to be resolved, but who that backup quarterback would be, it is important. You don't need much explanation why. Just look at last season. Team did not have a qualified backup quarterback. Another name to mention, I don't know if it was mentioned last week or not, Jonte Cook. He's entered the transfer portal. Contract dispute. I don't think he necessarily wanted, or I don't think Fran Brown necessarily wanted him to leave, but. He wants more money. I can't say he had probably the best experience at Syracuse, just from a few incidents here and
AJ,
there.
that's gonna be 4 years with how many different schools?
Yeah.
I just said the number.
Yeah.
Four schools in 4 years. Welcome to real life now.
Yeah. So,
Well,
hopefully, maybe.
he only played for three of
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he
So,
never played it. Yeah, that's right.
Washington, right? Yeah.
Got kicked out.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Nice.
So hopefully he finds a maybe a more settled place to be home. Darryl Gill was not, I don't think that was expected either. I was kind of surprised when I saw that one come out. So there, I think there's still a hole maybe at wide receiver. And again, just like they've done in years past, bringing in a lot of guys with not a whole lot of experience, hoping to mold them into something. It'll be interesting to see what Fran Brown does. Portal isn't open much longer, and there's no second portal to grab anybody either. It's now or never, which I think is a good thing, but it also just puts more pressure on Fran Brown and Syracuse to gather in that NIL money and try and fork it out where they can. Transfer portal is really maybe even bigger than recruiting at this point in college football. And you can look at that right now in the college football playoffs, the amount of transfers that are on the field. What I think is, I don't know if Oregon's quarterback was a transfer, but obviously Indiana
He
is. And
was.
so,
He
you okay? There we go.
originally committed to Oregon, then he flipped to UCLA, and then he flipped back to Oregon after his freshman season. He played right here in Detroit, so I knew him pretty well. But
There
yeah,
we go.
he just about everyone is a transfer
Future
now.
Jets quarterback for sources.
Sure. Or the Raiders. Whoever takes Dante Moore, yes.
Last thing to touch on before we say goodbye, lacrosse season is beckoning. It is right here, and Syracuse is going to get ranked second. That's where they're starting off. And again, we've talked about it briefly, but this is all the pressure, all the chips are on the table for Gary Gates' group. And for the women's side, they have, I think, different expectations this year with the new head coach than they have in years past. But I Griffin, I still can't get over this schedule. The fact that this team goes on an absurd road trip where they are not home for one, two, three, four, six games is just bonkers to me. And it's not like you're playing nobody. You're playing quality teams on this road trip.
Yeah, Gary Gate is testing his guys. He is making sure they're ready for when they hit the road in the postseason, and you know it's do or die time. And I don't know if Gary Gate's job's going to be on the line if this season doesn't go well. There's certainly going to be a lot of things up for discussion. I'm interested to see where Inside Lacrosse is going to have them ranked when their initial preseason rankings come out. I wouldn't be surprised if they're number one. You know, Maryland has some good guys. UNC is good. Cornell, you know, obviously using CJ Kearse, they won't be all the way up there, but they're reigning national champions. I think Syracuse could have a chance to be number one on the Inside Lacrosse preseason poll. You know, we'll have Terry Foley on per usual later in the next couple of weeks as lacrosse season gets even closer. It's time. It's Joey Spolina tour time. It's Joey Spolina national
Please them.
championship time.
Yeah, like
It's
that.
Joey
Oh, here we
Spolina.
go.
Yeah,
We're
I like
all
that. The
struggling with
Spolina.
names. Spolina season, the
All struggling
Spolina.
with the names today.
All right. It's Joey Spolina season. Tuorton. Joey Spelina season, national champion. Joey Spelina season, most points in a Syracuse uniform. That is the expectation. All three of those things happening. I think if you get two of those, you might call it a success. If you get one of those, depending on which one it is, maybe you can get away with it. But all three are possible, and all three could be in the cards. And that could be defining him one of the Syracuse greats if he gets that national championship, if he gets that Tuorton award, and if he ends up having the most points after his career is done. There's a lot of guys around him, a lot of good guys around him. It's just, can they do it? Can they win?
Peyton Anderson, Tuorton.
He's good.
Listen, before that road trip, though, they have Maryland at home. So that's going to be a really interesting tone setter before they go on the road because, you know, they got the usual tune-ups at the start of the year. BU is ranked, and then St. Joseph's, that's like their Manhattan game. They'll handle St. Joseph's with ease. But then, you know, that Maryland game, you know, they obviously lost last year down in College Park, but this is a big one because if you start the season hot and you beat Maryland, I mean, there's really nothing stopping the momentum of this team. I mean, if they get that win to kind of set the tone for the season that early, it's going to be really hard to slow this team down. And I absolutely believe, I mean, we already talked about it a few weeks ago, but this is the year. It's now or never. It's do or die. Gary Gate has to get it done this season, and I think he will. The guys are loaded. This roster is good, and they have the pieces. There's no reason why this is not the year to get it done.
It'll be interesting. So, go ahead, Griff.
Yeah, well, actually, you go, and then I'll take it back.
I was just gonna say I'm excited, and I'm just bummed out that it's my senior year. I won't be able to cover it for WAER.
Well, you can go to the games. Yeah,
I can.
Have some fun.
But I can't hop on the pod immediately after a triple overtime win against Virginia or Duke or something like that.
AJ, we'll have you back on as a guest if you want.
How would that? I don't know how title.
Well,
as much as
Josh,
the cross experience,
I
think
I
gained.
Want
oh, man, that hurt.
Here we have our Ostrom Avenue podcast beat reporter, AJ Meyer.
I would love that.
Just wait for those lacrosse picks and when Syracuse is pick'ems with Duke, you know, those would be fun. You know, I think it's too early to pick a lacrosse guy, but I think I have a feeling who mm-hmm. Josh's might be.
Peyton Anderson.
All right, I guess Josh is picking his now. I'll give mine a little more time. I'm trying to think of who my guy was. It might have been Jimmy McCool. It might have been John Mullen or Jimmy McCool last year. I feel like, do you remember yours, AJ?
There were so many. I know. I think you were McCool.
I think I was McCool. I mean, they're both from Boston, so that's why I probably went with one of them.
Sure. Yeah.
It's also. I think today is also the first day for women's lacrosse practicing. You know, first year.
Owen Hiltz was my guy. Sorry, Owen Hiltz. How could I forget?
Yeah. That does check out. He was your guy. Him. You did, and
he was great. Yeah. I mean, clutch.
He was really good. Yeah, and we kept talking about Trey Deer trying to fit himself into the role of playing and then not playing and then playing only on man-up opportunities. Last year lacrosse season was fun.
It was awesome.
Finally making it back to championship weekend. The women's squad, they start practice today. I'm pretty sure first season under head coach Reggie Thorpe. It's going to be a huge transactional year for them, you know. Who's going to step up as a leader? No more Emma Ward. You finally get kind of like that group of players are all gone. No more Emma Ward. No more Tyrells, Carneys. Like Ward was like the last kind of one of that group to finish. And now it's all on the hands of new players. And we'll see how they can do. And that'll be interesting. Lacrosse season's always fun in Syracuse. Hopefully you kind of have last year we were all waiting for lacrosse because basketball was hitting the rubber. So hopefully we have good basketball towards the end of the year, maybe. And then mix that with lacrosse. It should be a fun time. Fun spring season for a lot of these sports.
Certainly. And the Oster Avenue podcast will be the place to be for it all. Still plenty of basketball. As I said, Syracuse and Pitt, that's on the docket. Saturday, 2 p.m., 1:30, McClure Remodeling countdown to tip off. So be sure to tune in for that one, and we'll have you back next week to recap that game. And maybe after them, I think it's Florida State on Tuesday. So it could be two games after to give a full in-depth analysis of how things are. Getting you ready for Boston College on Saturday. Hopefully we'll have a fun guest to talk to as well for you to listen. Be sure to listen to previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And until then, we will see you guys next week.